time once again for Community Forum, and we are very lucky to have with us live in the studios this morning Dr. Evan Cantor. He is a staff psychiatrist at the Seattle VA, and we're going to be discussing PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. Dr. Cantor, thank you for coming in this morning.
Thanks for having me, Mike.
If we could start out, I'm wondering if you could give us a description of what is PTSD.
Post-traumatic stress disorder. I think probably you get a more accurate idea if you call it post-traumatic sensitization disorder. This is one of the things that can happen to people after they're exposed to extremely traumatic events that would produce feelings of terror or horror or helplessness. And there are a variety of symptoms. They include re-experiencing or memory symptoms like nightmares, flashbacks, triggers of various kinds, sights, sounds, smells that take someone back and disrupt what they're doing, avoidance and emotional numbing, withdrawing from people. People with PTSD have lives that may shrink down. They may have very few, if any, social contacts. And they will go out of their way to avoid anything which reminds them of their trauma. And then there are symptoms that we would call hyperarousal symptoms, kind of too much adrenaline type things, not being able to sleep, not being able to concentrate, difficulty controlling emotions, particularly anger, hypervigilance, which is being extremely watchful or on guard all the time, having an exaggerated startle response. So there are a whole range of different symptoms, but they basically amount to a tremendous amount of stress and dysfunction and often inability to deal with other people, maintain any kind of employment, just function every day.
All right. And what are the causes of PTSD? I think most of us would assume the main cause is war, and that we hear about this with soldiers.
Well, one of the major causes in men still is combat exposure, but there's lots of reasons and lots of different traumas that can produce PTSD. You can get it from a terrible accident or a natural disaster like a flood or a fire or an earthquake. You can get it from rape trauma, and sexual assault is the leading cause of PTSD currently in women. One of the things that is different in the current conflict in Iraq that we're going to see is we're going to start to see large numbers of women with combat trauma for the first time. So we see men and women in our clinic. The majority of men have combat trauma, but there may be other types of things, a helicopter crash, a motor vehicle accident. So there are other types of traumas that can produce it. And the women that we see in the clinic, most of them are there because they've been raped on military bases or in a military setting.
Do you have a sense for the likelihood of suffering from PTSD based on the incidents that people undergo, like, let's say, a natural disaster, an act of God, versus something that involves other humans?
Right. And kind of the act of God or accident is a key phrase. Interpersonal traumas like rape or getting badly beaten up are much worse psychologically than an act of God like an earthquake or a flood. So that for a motor vehicle accident, the rate of PTSD might be something on the order of 2%. For sexual assault, it's probably more like 50%. For combat, there's a range, and it depends on what the experience is. But to take just a big example, out of all the Vietnam veterans who were exposed to combat, 30% got PTSD. Out of those 30%, half of them got better, and half of them remained in this chronic form of PTSD that they're still suffering from today. So 15% of the combat-exposed Vietnam vets have chronic PTSD 35 years later. Unfortunately, there's a lot of reasons to expect that we're going to see similar rates in some of the folks coming back from Afghanistan and Iraq. Certain things may make it more or less likely, and we can talk about some of those. Obviously, things like being held prisoner and just the extent of time that you spend in combat situations would make it worse.
All right, so maybe we can go into that, since we're obviously, they were about to rotate troops back, and then they decided to hold them there in Iraq longer. We don't know for how long. Are you seeing any of those, of the few people that have come back, are you seeing any of those as patients yet?
Yeah. In our clinic, we're seeing about one or two a week coming in. There's a big lag time between when they're discharged from the service and when they come into the VA system, because we don't see active duty people. There are a large number of vets with psychiatric problems now at places like Walter Reed Army Hospital or here at Madigan Army Hospital, and we will get those folks eventually when they're discharged from the service.
And when you eventually get those folks, have they been treated prior to that? I mean, you're saying they're at Madigan. Are they getting good care there?
Yeah, I think they are. I think that one of the biggest differences between the Vietnam era and currently is that we know something about this disorder. The clinical entity of PTSD only came into existence in 1980. So in the early 70s, people with severe PTSD were usually misdiagnosed either as schizophrenic or having bipolar disorder and given the wrong medication. And a lot of these guys have really wandered for many years without getting the right kind of help. And we're hopeful that now we're going to have better recognition and treatment available earlier. It also helps that the general population has a better sense of PTSD, especially after 9/11. People know that firefighters get PTSD and police officers and rescue workers get PTSD. So there's just a better sense of it in the population. People have some idea what to look for and that they should send somebody to the VA or to some other facility if they need some help.
Is PTSD something that just has been around a long time and just had a different name in the past?
Absolutely. PTSD has been around forever. You can find PTSD in Shakespeare. There's one particular character in the Henry plays that is a combat veteran, and there's a long speech where his wife is complaining about basically all the symptoms of PTSD. You can go back to Homer's Iliad, and this Troy movie is out now, so people are familiar with that. And there's actually a widely read study by a VA psychiatrist named Jonathan Shea. It's called Achilles in Vietnam. And it's a close reading of the Iliad, and he shows basically that all the symptoms of PTSD are present in the character of Achilles. So it's been around forever. In World War I, it was shell shock. In World War II, it was combat neurosis. So it's always had a different name, and it basically always kept getting swept under the rug. And it wasn't until this generation, particularly the efforts of both the Vietnam Veterans Movement and the Battered Women's Shelter Movement, that finally got society to recognize this and deal with it appropriately.
Now, since this has been something that's been around for a long time, and since our current, multiple administrations have been involved in a lot of conflicts, have you guys seen some solid funding to help you deal with this, or was this, again, something that was kind of an afterthought for the current situation?
Well, certainly within the healthcare community, and that goes for both the Department of Defense medical system and the VA medical system, there's been a lot of discussion and attempt both to research new treatments, to look at the system and figure out how we're going to deal with this influx. I really fear, though, that the mostly civilian people at the top who are leading us into these wars have no clue. And I think that the bank is practically broken already. And I'm starting to see patients struggling with maintaining benefits that they already have. And I just don't see how we're going to deal with this. So I think from the point of view of the doctors and the healthcare workers, there's been a lot of discussion on how to treat people and a lot of stuff that people can find on the web that's very helpful. But the system as a whole is going to have such an influx of distressed vets that I don't see how it's going to be a rough go for quite a while, and especially if we keep producing new cases. So one of the things is I think you hear all the time about, you know, 800 soldiers have been killed and maybe 8,000 soldiers have been seriously wounded. Nobody ever talks about 80,000 soldiers who are going to have chronic post-traumatic stress disorder, and we're going to need to pay for their care.
And how do you treat or help people that have gone through this?
Basically, like most things in psychiatry, we have some medication treatments and we have some talking treatments, psychotherapies, and we have a clinical team. My clinic is the PTSD clinic at the VA. We see about 2,500 patients a year in the outpatient clinic. And between our two, we have two specialized inpatient programs. We see about 500 patients a year in those programs. And that's just at this one VA facility. As we have psychiatrists, psychologists, social workers, other types of therapists, support staff on the team. As an MD, I do a lot of medication evaluation and management of medications, but I also do various types of psychotherapies and exposure therapy, cognitive behavior therapy. And also there's actually a third group, which is just basic self-care things, like I teach relaxation, stress management, breath meditation, muscle relaxation techniques, and just basic coping skills we help people with, because the PTSD is an anxiety disorder, and these are people who have such over-the-top anxiety that they're not coping very well. Plus, physically, they're often a mess, and they usually have a lot of medical problems, multi-organ system problems, pain issues that are intimately connected with their stress symptoms.
And do you deal with people with your regular, well, I don't know, your walk-in patients and stuff, with more than just the conflict, let's say, in Vietnam, and then the current ones? Do you have people, let's say, going back to World War II?
Yeah, I've got the whole range. And we have a lot of World War II and Korean War vets, and we have every conflict you've ever heard of and not heard of. So it's amazing how many places in the world I see vets come back traumatized from one action or another. And the physiology is the same. It doesn't matter whether you have PTSD from World War II, from Vietnam, from Iraq, or from being in a plane crash or sexual assault. All these physiologic symptoms, having nightmares and not being able to sleep, is the same. There is a psychological dimension which may be different for the specific traumas. And so the World War II guys may have somewhat different issues than the Iraq or Vietnam guys. It also depends on what your job is. I see a lot of combat medics, for example, who have their own particular guilt issues about things they did or didn't do. So, you know, people in special forces who have done extreme things, people who have participated in or witnessed things that they consider to be atrocities, including torture. You know, certainly from my perspective, the stuff that we're seeing on the news with Abu Ghraib is not anything new at all. And I've treated people on both sides. I've treated both the people who've been tortured and the people who are the torturers. So that's something that's always gone on and will always go on in war.
So that's an interesting angle that you don't hear much on the news, that those people who are participating as torturers in these situations are going to be suffering psychological damage as well.
Tremendously. I think that probably many of the people who participate on any side of this issue in the Abu Ghraib and this whole scandal with the prison abuse are going to be suffering terribly from it many years later. This, again, goes back a long ways. There's a classic description of this by a famous activist and psychiatrist, Frantz Fanon, who wrote after the Algerian War, and he wrote a book called The Wretched of the Earth, which describes PTSD both in the Algerians and in the French legionnaires who were occupying. And people may have seen that this current conflict in Iraq has frequently been compared to the French occupation of Algeria. And so I expect very, very similar things to what was described decades ago.
And what would you expect if you were running your facility in Iraq with the population there? Would the population itself be also suffering from this PTSD?
Extremely. You know, and it's the order of magnitude difference between 50,000 Americans dying in Vietnam and 3 million Vietnamese dying in the same conflict. Iraq is probably the most traumatized population that's ever been studied. 95% or more of the people have PTSD. A quarter of the population is got active suicidal thoughts, including a study that was done right before we went in showed that 40% of children thought that life wasn't worth living much of the time. There is, if you take the two very pointed traumas, either having someone in your immediate family killed or witnessing someone actually killed in front of you, over 90% of the population has been exposed to one or both of those traumas. So I can't begin to imagine what kind of devastating effect, if we're trying to rebuild a country. There's been a generation of children that are going to be lost, I think, because they haven't had education, they haven't had health care. There's a lot of confounding factors, but basically that's a big question about a number of societies in the world that are so highly traumatized. And I think one of the reasons that war and social violence perpetuates itself can be explained through this clinical level of looking at PTSD. Because if you've got most of the people walking around with this clinical disorder where they can't control their anger and they're irritable and they don't trust anybody and they're triggered into action by very slight stimulus and all these kind of symptoms at an individual level, it seems like that would tend to perpetuate a lot of conflict. PTSD is also responsible for many other serious societal level problems. problems. I mentioned that people with severe PTSD have trouble maintaining jobs and relationships. So it relates to unemployment and also homelessness. That's one of our most shameful secrets, I think, in this country, is our homeless veteran population. 1/4 of all the homeless people in the U.S. are veterans, and 1/3 of all the male homeless people are veterans, and that's a very shameful statistic. And so in addition to homelessness and unemployment, you're going to see family violence and addiction problems as well are very big parts of this PTSD picture.
I know there's been incidents in the past where returning soldiers, I think the last one I remember was at Fort Bragg when they had a bunch of soldiers returning there, and there was a lot of, which made the newspapers, a lot of multiple murders from these soldiers. They killed their wives.
Yeah, the big buzzword after the investigations in the Fort Bragg murders has been decompression. Sometimes people will talk about debriefing. And basically, back in World War II, you came home on a ship, and it took 30 days, and you were with your comrades, and you could sort of decompress and talk about things. And now you can be in Afghanistan with your M16 one day, and 24 hours later, you can be back in the North Carolina suburbs sitting at your kitchen table with your kids, and that doesn't work very well. And so the recognition is that they can't just abruptly send people home without some kind of transition program, and so they're developing these decompression programs where they take 30 days and they counsel people on what kind of issues they're going to expect to confront when they come back, and they also counsel the families. And so I think that that's a important development, and we'll see. It's certainly necessary, but it's still, the problems remain, and it's a tremendous shock to people who return. They're having all these PTSD problems, but also their family situation is different, and there's a lot of coping problems when they get back. So it's a very stressful time. Another thing that's very different, that's very important, is the reception generally that people get when they get back home. So everybody knows that one of the terrible things in Vietnam was the you know, being called baby killer type thing, as a cliched version of it. But these people got a terrible reception and were blamed and shamed for events that occurred. And that is very bad. That makes more people get PTSD and makes the symptoms worse. And now it certainly seems that whatever your political opinion is about the war, everybody knows that they're supposed to support the soldiers that are coming back, and that will make a big difference toward beginning the healing that is needed. Let me just quickly mention, so a couple of things that are better are the reception coming home and the fact that we know more about PTSD and can treat it. There are some things which I'm very alarmed at, which are very, very similar to Vietnam, which make people believe that these guys are going to have a lot of the same problems. And some of the psychological factors on the battlefield, like a really bad one, is not knowing who the enemy is. And these people are frequently in situations where you can't tell. And you have a 10-year-old boy who's smiling at you in the morning, and in the afternoon he throws a grenade into your vehicle. That's very similar to what I hear over and over again from Vietnam vets, and it really makes PTSD a lot worse. Being in situations where you have these restricted rules of engagement, where you're thrown into a dangerous situation and told you can't fire, something like that is very distressing. Feeling like you've been lied to, and a feeling of betrayal, whether it's by your immediate superiors or anywhere in the chain of command, is terrible. And I'm hearing that, I hear that from World War II vets too, that is something that makes PTSD worse. And certainly this extension of the tour, people are very focused on a particular date when they get out, and then it's like the rug is just completely pulled out from under them. That can be very devastating psychologically, and will contribute to more PTSD and worse PTSD. So there's a lot of those sort of things that are kind of on the ground factors of the nature of the conflict. You know, not knowing who the enemy is, not clear why you're there sometimes, or what the mission is, and the mission keeps changing. That sort of scenario, it's a very different conflict, but some of the psychological factors that were so terrible in Vietnam are also present, and we are seeing, so far, what we're seeing is people presenting with classic PTSD that looks a lot like that.
Well, unfortunately, we are pretty much out of time, but what do you see as the solution to this? It would seem that perhaps not engaging in these conflicts would be a big
help.
That's
the solution. We have, you know, in public health, there's a concept of primary, secondary, and tertiary prevention. So most of what I do all day is tertiary prevention. But in my spare time as an activist, I work on trying to do primary prevention. I work with a group called Physicians for Social Responsibility, and there are many other groups. That's the only way that you're really going to take care of the problem, is to prevent the conflicts from happening in the first place.
All right. Well, I want to thank you for coming in this morning. We've just been talking with Dr. Evan Cantor. He is a staff psychiatrist at the Seattle VA